Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a series of honest conversations about opportunities,
challenges,
and joy in ministry today.
These episodes are inspired by interactions with ministry leaders from across the country
as they explore possibilities,
learn from broad perspectives,
take risks,
and cultivate candid discussions
that generate disruptive creativity.
Hi, friends. This is Adam Borneman with the Ministry Collaborative, and I'm really excited today to be with my friend of over a decade, Adam Young. Adam is the vicar at Chapel of the Incarnation Episcopal Church in Gainesville, Florida, and he's also the Episcopal chaplain to the university there. And I'm really happy to be able to talk to him about that and about his journey in ministry in general. Adam, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
So, Adam, I have to make sure to mention this for our listeners. You know, you and I got to know each other in Birmingham many years ago, but especially through our three-year-long ministry collaborative cohort there that we participated in together and traveled together and made a lot of other really good friends too, including my colleague Adam Mixon, who folks will also know from this podcast. So I'm increasingly thankful for that time together that we've had and so pleased that we've been able to stay in touch and continue to encourage one another.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, you always were a gatherer and a bringing together of disparate people for good conversation. That happened before the Ministry Collaborative group and continues afterwards. So I've always appreciated our friendship.
Adam, share with folks a little bit about how you got to where you are now, because it was not a straight line. You've kind of been all over the map denominationally,
yeah,
geographically. Yeah. So what's the short version of how you ended up in this Episcopal church in Gainesville?
Well, I'm a theological mutt and didn't grow up in the church and came to Christ during college. So had a number of different Christian ministry experiences, from inner city ministry to suburban ministry to yuppie downtown ministry. Along the way, I fell into Presbyterian ministry and ordination, and at some point discovered I really love liturgy, love the historic nature of our Christian faith, the creedal nature of how do we partner with other people of faith where we even have theological disagreements. And part of that is the relationships that you referenced in Birmingham, knowing that I have brothers and sisters in Christ that are playing their faith out in a variety of ways and settings and expressions. And I wanted to be closer to that. And so that was part of my journey into the Episcopal Church, where I got to work with a wider range of people than in my previous confessional church settings. And so through just a call from the bishop's office here out of Jacksonville, is where my bishop is, called with this missional opportunity. And I'd never done college ministry, but what he said is the entire campus community needs a biblical Episcopal witness. Can you go and preach the gospel and see what happens? And we're thinking of it as a very slow church plant. And so that's what it's been. So I showed up and there were three college students and a homeless lady. And then my family doubled, more than doubled the size of the congregation right away. And we went to work and built relationships. And so now we have two different services and fill up the chapel with a variety of services. And we have a midweek college ministry. So we've kind of inverted the paradigm from being a college ministry that happens to have church functionality to a church that houses a vibrant and robust ministry to the students of the university.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear about the amazing things that God has been doing with you and the people there in that community. I think for one reason, I've always considered you to be a really astute interpreter of the world around you and the culture that you inhabit, and also how to preach and exhibit grace in the midst of that. And I know that especially in the context of working with college students, that's been really probably even more valuable than you could recognize. So I'm really pleased to hear that. I'm especially drawn to that ministry with college students, given the pretty wild 10 or 15 years we've had here of the growth of digital media and political ideology. And there's so many things going on. And I think sometimes we forget that our college students and young adults are really at the center of that and bear the brunt of a lot of that. And some of the conversations you and I have had, I've been reminded and shocked by some of the things you've shared. So I would love to hear from you a bit about what that's been like and what you think people need to know about ministering to young people.
Well, I am definitely a learner and I'm continuing to learn. And I've definitely gotten older coming here, you know, coming from more mixed and varied church experiences to being on a university campus. It really is kind of the knife edge, so to speak, of the culture, where you're seeing what's coming down the pike, what kinds of changes are afoot, and recognizing how each generation is formed and shaped by all sorts of narratives and cultural aspects that perhaps are different or shifts from the previous one. So I'm at the tail end of Gen X, and so one thing that I noticed right away in coming to a college campus community was how badly everybody wanted a label for something. And they needed to have a way to not just label themselves, though that self-actualization piece is really important to figure out where and how you fit, who is your tribe, what does it mean to live in a postmodern world, but also how to see and identify others out of a sense of wanting to respect who everybody is, put them into these boxes. And that was very counter my own upbringing and experience, you know, where we as young people were like, don't put a label on me. Don't let the structure kind of force something on you. You be your own expression. I saw how hungry people were and how quick to put names and labels on things. And part of that is they've just been brought up in the Twitter generation of they have a hot take ready very fast in 180 characters. I mean, I guess now you can do 360 characters, whatever. But they're used to like seeing and synthesizing information very swiftly and quickly. They're very adept at it, very bright. But I also see where there's times where that misses exactly the whole nature of the story, because it kind of whittles it down into ones and zeros and bytes, as opposed to seeing the nuances and complexities of what makes us human. And so in that, I think there really is a hunger that's coming out of this younger generation for more relational approaches to conversations, to sharing spaces. But they are digital natives, so finding hybrid ways to do that, I think they're very interested in. But one example of that would just be, you know, we have a website and, you know, social media, and yet when we're together in our church and ministry setting, it's really a low technology or no technology kind of interaction in space. So one of the things students really like is just a shared meal. And I've had church groups that provide these meals on Sunday nights, and they'll come in and they're older generation boomers or Gen Xers, and they will come up to me and say, I'm astonished. I thought young people are always just on their phones, and I see these students, they're just interacting and talking to each other, and I don't see a phone in sight. And I say, oh yeah, I've never talked about it. I've never even thought about that. But they actually like being in a space where they're not being impulsively demanded to pay attention to their screen. And they like the difference of a setting where they're able to be face-to-face and have just human-to-human interaction.
Yeah, you're reminding me of a conversation on this podcast I recently shared with David Zoll. And we were talking about this authenticity exhaustion, that we've created this obsession with authenticity that actually is driven by a bunch of cultural constraints and structures. So it's just not a viable way forward. And yet it's the only thing that really drives so many of us. It's interesting to hear about how that shows up, especially in the lives of college students. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about recent data I saw that I believe it was from Pew that comes out with a survey about parenting and shows that the number one concern among parents is not bullying. It's not whether kids will get a job or not. There's this long list of things at the very top. It's anxiety and mental health. That is the number one thing that American parents are concerned about. And I imagine you're seeing that show up among college students a lot.
Oh, in spades. In spades, Adam. The weight of the world is literally on each person, because we have unfettered access to all the pain and sorrow and distress and problems of the world. And they beep right into our phones, and we take those in, and it has an effect. Not to mention just the innate stress and stressors that go into the American dream and the promises therein. I don't know, Adam, when you and I graduated college, there was a little bit of a sense of, I didn't have a plan. I just like graduated college and then was like, oh, what's next?
Right.
But they've been conditioned in such a way where it has trickled down to even elementary schooling, that what is required is not just kind of to get in or to do what it takes, but to do more than that. because more and more people are getting higher education. And so how do you separate yourself in a very competitive job market? And upwardly mobile families, they want their children to achieve or succeed beyond what they even did. And so those pressures are very real that students are having to encounter as young people. And it starts, like I said, in primary and secondary school, and then they definitely carry it with them to the university setting. I remember having a student, he was an aerospace engineer and a very bright guy, and he came to me and was like, man, I'm having a really hard time. And this was his junior year. And I said, oh, what's going on? And he said, I think I'm going to end up with a B in this class. It was a really tough physics class. And I said, oh, okay. B's sounds pretty good. He said, no, you don't understand. I've never made a B in my life. This feels like failure. And I said, if getting a B in aerospace engineering physics is a failure, then you are what we call a winner at life. That is, you are doing amazing. So that's the kind of pressure they're under, though. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a semester yet, Adam, where I haven't had to have an emergency intervention with a young person, either just due to such severity of mental health or even suicidality. Mm-hmm. It's very prevalent.
Adam, working both with young people and also just in a parish setting with multiple generations, you have me wondering about formation. And I wonder, from your perspective and your experience, what do pastors and congregations need to know about spiritual formation that we're missing? If someone said, Adam, I need to give you a top three list of things that are important for spiritual formation, you know, what are those things?
Yeah. You're getting after something that I think I probably tweak the list every couple years because it's hard to know where exactly to land. Mm. My circumstance and setting is quite unique. I've got the privilege and the honor of ministering to and among a lot of very not well-formed or completely disconnected people from the church. We've had a number of baptisms in the last couple of years of just brand new Christians who are not from religious or Christian backgrounds, where our church is the very first church some of these people have walked into, either as undergraduate or graduate students. And so we have a very unique context. But when it comes to the churched students that end up in our ministry, I would just say there's largely an inadequate biblical foundation of understanding of the narrative of the Bible. It's a very old school thought, but simply, how do we help our people read and understand the narrative of the Bible?
Yeah.
That, in other words, it's not an instruction manual. It's not your guide to your happiest life. It's not how to ascend and transform your current circumstances. It's rather the mysterious relationship building of God and his people, and God being the main action character, and we're kind of observing and watching and receiving.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that. I was recently speaking with some friends of ours who are sort of on the fringes of the church, and their religious faith is something they're just exploring. And these are friends we've had for a long time. And the thing they want to talk to me about is, tell me more about the Bible and where it comes from. They're interested in understanding some of these things that we hold dear to us. And I think sometimes in the context of the church, we think that, oh, well, that's too old school. We need to do something more creative. And yet I continue to find that people are actually just kind of interested in, well, tell me more about the sacred text and tell me more about you, why you do these weird things in worship. I mean, these very basic ways of living out Christian community. We've gone full circle where people are once again drawn to the weirdness of these things.
Yes. Oh, absolutely, Adam. That's completely, I think, in the water right now. Is modernity has come to its apex of post-Enlightenment reality. We're so disenchanted that encountering something that feels enchanted or has some aspect of mystery, they want to know, where do these ancient practices and beliefs and thoughts come from? And so instead of disentangling the Bible from the context and ancient world, actually having us travel and connect more to the ancient world, instead of making it so palatable or formed and molded around our consumeristic impulses and our need to feel affirmed in the here and now. Mm-hmm. It's more about transporting us into this other place and context, whereby there is something more mysterious happening.
Yeah, it's Karl Barth used to call it the strange new world within the Bible.
Right.
I mean, it was basically like this call to just inhabit the story of the Bible and stop trying to provide answers. Just walk into this story with Abraham and get confused like Abraham. I am really drawn to that. And I have to say, it'll stick with me that you're talking about, particularly about young people and isolation and anxiety and all of these things. And that for you, in the context of that, your mind immediately goes to, we just need to do a better job talking about the stories that shape us. I think that's so simple and yet so profound.
Yeah.
So along those same lines, what's a story that's shaping you? What sort of scripture do you look to these days? And as you said earlier, things change every few days for you. So what's it today?
They do. Yeah. I think in this season of Lent, I've been hearing and reading and having conversations with people about forgiveness. Hmm. Thinking about Psalm 32 and what it means to be forgiven and covered and not having our iniquity counted against us. I think it's one of the greatest prevailing desires and longings that people hold. And in some ways, I think the story of at least our social media age has been one of trying to alleviate judgment or redirect condemnation. Mm. How do we escape getting the eye of Sauron put on us? I think that's still a palpable desire in the hearts of people. Obviously, that's woven throughout the scriptures of people who are just needing a sense of relief from the burden of their own sin and their own waywardness and being called back again and again to the God who loves them.
Adam, thanks so much for the good ministry you're doing and for this ongoing conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Adam.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.